From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
How did Joe Biden do in his first big speech to Congress? And what were the highlights of the Republican response from Senator Tim Scott? Welcome. I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, WSJ columnists Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. On Wednesday, President Biden addressed a joint session of Congress to make the case for another $4 trillion or so in spending that he's proposed. And the atmosphere in the room was a bit strange because of the social distancing precautions. Most of the seats were empty. There were no shout-outs to special guests up in the rafters, as we've gotten used to at some of these State of the Union addresses. And maybe it was just my perception, but Bill, it felt like maybe the thinness of the applause made for a quicker address. But what were your impressions?
Well, it's interesting, you know, as someone who's written a few State of the Unions, usually the goal is for the speechwriters, for the president's team, to force the other side, the minority party, to cheer for your agenda. You word it in such a way, you make it very hard for them not to cheer, or it may at least make them look like sourpusses if they sit down. But because of the social distancing and so forth, the thinness, I think all that went out the window. As you said, it went much more quickly because of this. You don't have, you know, the 30 seconds of thunderous applause, and then people have to sit down before the president can start to speak again. It made for a very, very different evening. Look, most people, a lot of work goes into a State of the Union, but the truth is, every year speechwriters say it's not going to be a laundry list, and every year, unless there's, you know, an attack on the country or something, it is a laundry list. It's just the structure of the event that you're presenting the president's agenda. So I thought he did a workable, he didn't make any mistakes. I thought he did a fairly workable State of the Union, but State of the Unions are usually forgotten. What wasn't forgotten, I think, is Tim Scott. You know, I waited up to see him because I thought I had to for work. And I was incredibly impressed, because usually you can't win in that speech. You know, the president has just given an address from the podium of the House to the three branches of government and the American people. And then they move to you after half the audience is, you know, turned off their TVs and so forth. And whatever set you're on, you look diminished. But I thought Tim Scott delivered a really powerful speech. And he laid out Republican principles, pushed back on a little bit of progressive bigotry, and I think put himself and the Republican Party in a much better place. It's very interesting to me. You know, his big line is America is not a racist country. It's very interesting that the next day, Kamala Harris was asked if she agreed, and she said yes, and so did Joe Biden. I don't think that would have happened without Tim Scott's speech.
Well, I don't have the viewership numbers for Scott's speech, but I do have them for Biden, and they're kind of interesting. It's estimated that about 25 million people watched the address, and that's down from about 48 million people who watched Donald Trump's first address to a joint session in 2017. And on one hand, that's fewer people that Biden is reaching with his message. On the other hand, it's fewer people paying attention to this $6 trillion price tag that he's proposing. So, I mean, Kim, how do you think Biden did overall? And is boringness part of his superpower here?
Well, there is something to the boringness simply in terms of watching him. However, I think that if you are listening and paying attention, the words he is saying are anything but boring. They're quite alarming. You know, I was struck overall, just it was hard to get beyond the fact that he began the speech essentially with a couple of really big whoppers. One of those was a suggestion that his administration takes all the credit for the quick pace of vaccinations, the fact that we are moving beyond this pandemic. You know, he actually was just very lucky. He took the oath of office as all those COVID-19 vaccines were coming online. And, you know, this pretense that they inherited a mess is crazy. The vaccine production was pre-planned. The states, some of them had a little bumpy rollouts at the beginning, and there was a lot of demand, more demand than supply. But But, you know, if the administration has done anything, yeah, it's accelerated the distribution that was already underway. So that was very striking. The other was his argument that he inherited a house on fire in terms of the economy. The economy has been roaring back to life since last quarter. It was always going to, given people coming out of lockdowns. You know, we just got a real GDP of 6.4% for the first quarter. That's just astonishingly good news, but that was pretty much all baked in well before the administration has done anything. So it's hard to watch that and then feel as though what came afterward had a lot of credibility. And what essentially the rest of the speech was while given, as you said, in somewhat boring terms, a kind of radical proposal to completely transform the country with $6 trillion worth of spending and changes to every program from cradle to grave. So, you know, I hope people are paying attention to that, even if they didn't feel like tuning in on the night precisely.
I agree with you on the jobs and the economy and the vaccines, Kim. I have a couple of lines here from him. He said the economy created more than 1.3 million new jobs in 100 days, more jobs in the first 100 days than any president on record. He also talked about how when he was sworn in, less than 1% of seniors were fully vaccinated against COVID, and now it's 70%. And every president, of course, takes credit for, I mean, I think presidents in general get more credit for economic trends than they deserve. And every president takes credit for what is happening when they happen to be in office. But Bill, the clear implication of what he was suggesting was that Joe Biden came in and he got the job done.
Yeah, look, I think he did get some parts done. He probably helped with the vaccinations a little bit, but especially as you point out on the economy, it's hard to take credit for jobs that are created. Like, you've just gotten office and he hasn't really passed anything except the COVID relief. How did that have any effect on jobs? The truer thing is that the economy was starting to come back under Donald Trump, and it's continued to come back. You know, it reminds me that Pete Buttigieg was on, Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace, and he was making the claim that the infrastructure plan was going to create 19 million new jobs. And Wallace pointed out that the study that this was based on said 2.5 million new jobs, really, that 16 million of those jobs would have been created anyway. So there's kind of a lot of exaggeration going on. Again, maybe you expect some of this in the State of the Union. It will be very interesting to hear President Biden explain the State of the Union a year or 2 years from now, if a lot of his spending and taxes go through, because I don't think it's going to be a pretty story.
But even with regard to that $1.9 trillion COVID bill that did pass in Biden's early days, I still think it's hard to make an argument that that is what saved the economy here. I mean, it's interesting. The day after Biden's speech on Thursday, we got some new economic numbers for the first quarter of the year. And they show that the economy grew by almost 6.5% and almost recovered to the GDP, the gross domestic product figures, almost recovered to the pre-pandemic peak back in 2019. So, Kim, I mean, how does Biden think that he can draw those lines to say that this bill, with all this money that hasn't even been spent and disbursed, is responsible for that?
Well, he can't. Look, and this just goes to what you were just saying, is they're going to try to take credit for as much as they can, because it's now important that they do so that they can get the second and third installments that they're proposing, right? You know, you need to suggest that it's government, I'm here from government, and I'm going to help you, and that this is what is inspiring the economic revival, so that you can further argue that the same amount of spending as required for an infrastructure bill that will also get us even more back to work, and the same amount is needed for the families plan, and that government actually works. And of course, the reality is that we know it doesn't. And that's something that really, really struck me in this speech too, is as he made that pitch for greater government involvement in life. It's as if Joe Biden has no experience, a guy who's actually been in office most of his life, with all of the programs we already have that intrude in people's lives and replace private sector or other things and that don't work. You know, we're talking about universal pre-K. Well, what's Head Start? We've had that forever and it's remained a failing program. You know, we've had the Women, Infants, and Children program that's supposed to prevent child hunger. So why exactly do we supposedly have so much child hunger and poverty, according to Joe Biden? You know, and this is so they've got to go out there and make the case that it is working, because any kind of realistic step back to look at this, it makes it incredibly clear that government generally fails at things like this. And that will make people less tolerant of the idea of sending another $4 trillion out the door.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
Your Money Briefing will explore what you need to know to become a homeowner and how to sustain your home by learning ways to manage the costs from unexpected expenses.
You're basically always in a state of checking. You're always keeping your eye open for anything that could be going wrong with your house. Your house is a complicated machine. It has a lot of systems and components in it, and those systems and components are getting older. They're wearing out.
You can get early access to our series, Buying a Home and Keeping It, on WSJ Special Access. Only for WSJ subscribers.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. A few more thoughts on Biden's speech before we move more to Tim Scott. One thing that I was looking for, especially given how Biden campaigned as a unifier, somebody who can make the deals we need in Washington, is there was not a whole lot of unity that I detected in this speech. The closest I heard from Biden was after he talked about his infrastructure plan. He said this: "I applaud a group of Republican senators who just put forward their own proposal." Unquote. And Bill, I guess that's a little bit of an olive branch, but it's applause. It's not him saying, it's not Biden saying, "Let's cut a deal here."
Right. It's not saying he's going to listen to them or anything. I mean, this has been characteristic of Joe Biden from the beginning. And I believe it's one of the things that Tim Scott highlighted, that, you know, in his victory speech when he first won, he talked about unity and healing and bringing people together. And, you know, he had a reputation as a senator for doing that, in the sense of always being willing to deal and meet with the other sides and cut a deal and make compromises. And that Joe Biden is gone. And Tim Scott pointed to that this is fake. It's not unity. I mean, they're redefining everything. They're redefining like pre-K as infrastructure, as these other spending programs as family friendly. Everything is a redefinition, and bipartisanship in the Biden vocabulary. You can have bipartisanship without having a single Republican vote. It's just ridiculous. I go back to Tim Scott because I think he identified this. And, you know, you have these $1 trillion programs coming at him. He not only identified that Joe Biden was not really being the unifier and bipartisan president he had claimed to be, but he isolated the difference between the Republican and the Democratic agendas. You know, the Biden agenda is basically the life of Julia on steroids. If anyone remembers that from the Obama administration, it talked about the life of a fictional Julia, and every point of the way she's benefiting from some government program. The Republican answer to that, as Senator Scott indicated, we believe in independence, self-reliance, and so forth, and the dignity of work, especially work. And I thought he did a very effective job in highlighting that difference, because that's what explains our narrative. You know, why we are not for what Joe Biden is for, and what the principles are for our own agenda.
The last thing from Biden that jumped out to me, at least, was when he was talking about his own plans He especially on the infrastructure, he was selling the hard infrastructure stuff, roads, bridges, and then really not talking about it with any sort of price tag on it. He never said the T word, trillion, in relation to his own proposals. And then as for how to pay for it, Biden said this, I made it clear we can do it without increasing the deficits. Let's start with what I will not do. I will not impose any tax increase on people making less than $400,000, unquote. Kim, how do you grade that promise?
I grade that as, what does the Washington Post do? Four Pinocchios? I think that's, you know, maybe going on to six or something. Look, you know, we wrote, for instance, in our editorial, we just gave one example about how much, for instance, the permanent child tax credit expansion would cost. You know, the White House is saying it's only going to cost $420 billion. But that's because it only includes 4 years. It's only scoring it through 2025. We put in our editorial evidence or information from Cornerstone Macro that pointed out that the real cost of that is $1.6 trillion over 10 years. Okay, so that's most of what Biden is actually saying his entire bill is going to cost. And it's only dealing with one provision of it, the child tax credit expansion. That's before you get to a new federal, you know, paid leave program and free community college and everything else. So they're playing games with the numbers. One of the reasons is because everyone understands this, that there is no way you can finance this much spending, okay? Because the number is $10 trillion when you add in the regular government outlays for the year, which is about $4 trillion plus the six he is proposing. $10 trillion cannot be financed by, you know, 1% of the wealthy or by raising taxes, marginal tax rates on companies. It's just, it's not going to happen. So the only way you can do it is that you have to ultimately go after the middle class. You know, and that's why we've seen the definitions changing of, you know, 400,000. Well, actually that's your whole household, not each of you. You know, and just wait, at some point we're going to have a discussion about raising payroll taxes or other things that are going to hit every American. And even Bernie Sanders was honest about that at one point when he was campaigning, saying that this is where we were going to have to go.
Well, what about this idea that Biden is also touting about doing an IRS crackdown? And one of his plans says that if we invest in the IRS and get more agents doing more audits, we can raise essentially $700 billion over 10 years. Bill, I mean, do you think those numbers are a reasonable estimate of what that kind of program could produce?
First of all, I just want to start out with the phrase that you use, which should sum up the cynicism: invest in the IRS. Does anyone believe that this is a growth enhancer or something? Look, politicians always claim they're going to pay for stuff by cutting out waste, fraud, and abuse. And the reason is there's no one wants waste, fraud, and abuse. It sounds really good, but it's harder to cut it out. What it means is there'll be more audits and so forth, the companies. I'm not sure this is the way to go. In fact, I think one of the better reforms of the IRS has been when it's been hurting for money a little bit. You know, fewer agents and so forth. I don't see a prosperous America with a large and aggressive IRS. I think they're contradictory things.
So Kim, as far as Tim Scott's speech, Bill has given some thoughts, but what were your overall impressions of how he did in a really difficult position replying to the president?
Well, first of all, one thing just on the atmospherics, he was fortunate in that, you know, usually the deck is just stacked against the response person, in part because the president is standing in front of all of Congress, Supreme Court, people packed in, the sort of majesty of that and pageantry. And then the poor response person is basically talking to a camera alone. And so there's quite a disparity there, and it makes it harder. In that regard, Tim Scott had a pretty good opportunity because because the president's own address had so many fewer people and it lacked that energy. So they were a little bit more on a level playing field. But the other thing I really loved about Scott's address is that, you know, everybody understands what Republicans are against. And Republicans have done a fairly good job of criticizing all of these proposals from the Biden administration on all the various merits. It's harder to get across what Republicans are for, but it's just as important. And, you know, I think Bill touched on this. He hit a lot of those themes, individual freedom over government, equal opportunity, work, the dignity of work. He pointed out that this country is not the racist, horrible place that Democrats define it all the time, and noted that, you know, this ought to be, and he said, I quote, "This should be a joyful springtime for our nation." And so that kind of optimism, I think, is something that the Republican Party needs a lot more of. It's something that American people will gravitate to at the moment. And I just thought he did a really great job.
One other piece of Scott's speech that jumped out to me when we were talking about the idea of some sort of bipartisanship is he said this. Scott said, "Republicans support everything you think of when you think of infrastructure, roads, bridges, ports, airports, waterways, high-speed broadband. We're in for all of that. But again, Democrats want a partisan wish list. They won't even build bridges to build bridges," unquote. And I thought that was interesting, especially in the context of the fact that there's this group of Republicans who have come up with an infrastructure package of their own to offer about $600 billion. So, Bill, I mean, what about the prospects of that?
I'm not sure there are any. And if there were now, I would worry about it a little bit, because I think, you know, one of the Democratic plans may be to have a smaller bill, get the Republicans on board, but then just take all the spending that's controversial and put it in another bill. I don't think that's really bipartisan. Bipartisan is give and take. Look, this is history repeating itself, as Senator Scott knows. You know, he put forward a police reform bill last year, relatively modest, but tailored. And the Democrats wouldn't even talk to him about it. You know, they didn't want to consider it. So that's the story that he's dealing with. And I thought, frankly, he was most effective on race, not just because he's an African-American, but I think he called out what's going on, where people are trying to use a narrative, as he said, to prevent a debate today. And that's why he was effective. He was brave and he was principled. And you could look at the man and you say, this is consonant with who he is. It was a very genuine address.
But it is interesting when we're talking about this, these $6 trillion plans, that the most important man in Washington, West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, is expressing a little bit of reluctance at the price tag. He said this week, "A lot of money that makes you very uncomfortable. You're going to find out how you pay for it." He said, "We're $28.2 trillion now in debt. There's a balance to be had, and we've got to work that out," unquote. So, Kim, does that give you any more hope that he will stand up at some point and say no to all of this these plans from President Biden?
You know, I don't know. And I think I'm so over trying to figure out Joe Manchin, the cipher, because he does change his mind a lot. you know, I think it's good that a Democrat is publicly talking about the obvious here, which, you know, he went on to say, are we going to be able to be competitive and be able to pay for what we need as a country? We got to figure out what our needs are, maybe make some adjustments. And he did talk too about one very specific provision. Apparently he was particularly skeptical of the proposal in the bill to spend about $200 billion on federally funding preschool, noting, which is a pretty obvious point, that West Virginia was able to do it without federal help, even though it's one of the nation's poorer states. And so here's his quote on that. "We got pre-K in West Virginia. We didn't have the federal government step up to the plate on that. We did it," end quote. So, yeah, like he holds a lot of power. But then again, any particular Democrat holds a lot of power when you're in a 50-50 Senate. And so we'll see where that goes. Let's also see where he falls in the end on these discussions that are going on the infrastructure side and the Republican plan to put forward, more like in the 600, 700 billion range on more targeted infrastructure. We still haven't kind of got results on that, whether or not there's truly a building block there for, but if it is, that might be a model for how you could deal with this family's plan too. The problem, I think, is just that there are a lot of progressives in the wings. They're not going to be happy, and they're going to want to jam all of it through in a reconciliation bill.
Thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of Potomac Watch.